In our last podcast, we chronicled the origin story of Taipei's three architectural gems, the Chiang Kai-shek Memorial Hall, finished in 1980, and the two nearby performing arts buildings, the National Theater and Concert Hall, finished in 1987.
The Taiwan History Podcast, Formosa Files, is made possible through the generous sponsorship of the Frank C. Chen Foundation. Formosa Files.
Now, 1987 was a transitional year. It marked the end of 38 years of martial law. It was also a time when Taiwan was moving away from labor-intensive to capital-intensive manufacturing. And in fact, 1987 is the year when Mattel moved its Barbie doll production to cheaper locations in Asia, and also the year semiconductor manufacturer TSMC was founded. 1987 marks the start of Taiwan's cultural renaissance and Taiwan's internationalization of the arts.
Yes, we should recap what the two buildings are. The National Theatre mainly hosts traditional opera, drama, and dance performances. There's also a smaller experimental theatre for approximately 240 people. It's designed for a more niche, smaller scale theatre and dance performances.
The concert hall primarily hosts symphony orchestras, choirs, chamber music, organ performances, and vocal performances. There's also a small recital hall with 354 seats, providing a place for chamber music and solo performances. So there are four spaces spread across the two venues, but the recital hall, the one with 354 seats, that's the one with the highest number of performances throughout the year.
When we left off in episode one, the National Theatre and Concert Hall had just completed a successful launch and opening season with the New York City Opera. And I don't think we mentioned it, but also there was the Cleveland Orchestra there. In the following years, big name foreign performers came, including opera superstar Luciano Pavarotti. That was in February 1990. The show packed the house, of course. An estimated 50,000 others watched on an outdoor screen. Other big names include celloist Yo-Yo Ma, ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev, and the Royal Shakespeare Company.
The likes of the New York City Opera and Pavarotti were a success, but spending money on foreign acts like that was unsustainable. Part of the problem was a lack of first-rate local talent. Taiwan had, in the preceding decades, been focused on military and economic matters, not cultural development. And we're not just talking about the government, the people too. They'd been busy trying to raise their living standards. So any kid going like, hey, mom, I want to be a dancer, a musician, they would have gotten a rather good chewing out. The fine arts had some prestige. The National Palace Museum got some attention. But performing arts, really? No.
No. But local talent was gradually developed. The two halls soon became regular venues for the island's best-known performing arts groups, including the Cloud Gate Dance Theatre, Taiwan's most successful modern dance troupe, and the National Symphony Orchestra, NSO, also known as the Taiwan Philharmonic outside Taiwan. The National Symphony Orchestra was founded in 86, and it's basically been the orchestra in residence at the National Theatre and Concert Hall since then.
Another frequent local performer was the Minghua Yuan Taiwanese Opera Troupe. Minghua Yuan is the largest Taiwanese opera troupe. Founded in 1929, so that would be back in the Japanese era, Taiwanese opera, Ge Zai Xi, uses Taiwanese language as opposed to Peking opera, which uses Mandarin Chinese. And that's just one of many differences between Taiwanese and Peking opera.
Yeah, though for some people that will raise the question, what is Peking opera? Worth explaining, as it made up a lot of the performances in the early years of these concert halls.
Basically, Peking opera combines singing, reciting, and spoken word, acting, and martial arts. It uses Chinese instruments. As you might hear from the clip that I just played there, it's an acquired taste, I think.
Very traditional. But speaking of tradition, Taiwan was rapidly changing economically, culturally, politically, and these two performing arts venues reflected that. and they played a part in the change by the performances they gave, the education and training programs, and these buildings. They were also witness to big events because of the huge public space between the CKS Memorial Hall and these two performing arts buildings.
It's now called Liberty Square, and it had a front row seat to Taiwan's democratic evolution. It served as the city's prime public gathering place, and its name now is Liberty Square, but that's a new name. It reflects the important historical role it played, especially in the late 1980s and early 1990s, all the way to 96, right, which saw Taiwan's transition from one-party rule to modern democracy. The most important of the many political gatherings there was the Wild Lily protests of 1990. Huge student protests, tens of thousands, a six-day sit-in calling for democratic reforms. If you go through the photos from 1990, you're going to find a whole bunch of images of people who are today mayors, politicians, you know, all kinds of leaders of Taiwan.
Yeah, yeah. Jai County Magistrate, he cut his teeth there in the Wild Lily protests. But Eric, a huge square filled with pro-democracy student protesters. This is less than a year after Tiananmen in Beijing.
Yeah, very good point, and a very different ending. Instead of tanks rolling in, I believe leaders from the government came down and met with them, and the demands of the protesters were met. Taiwan saw its first direct presidential election in 1996.
Mm-hmm. The square has been used for lots of cultural activities, marching band contests and such. And in May 1997, it hosted what was called the Super Concert, the largest ever outdoor concert then held in Taiwan.
Featuring opera greats Jose Carreras, Placido Domingo, and pop diva Diana Ross. I think there was also an orchestra from the Czech Republic.
A huge stage was set up at the arched gate end, facing the huge open plaza, and in the distance, the Chiang Kai-shek Memorial Hall. There was seating provided for about 60,000-70,000, but many more enjoyed the concert.
Yeah, they sort of crashed it. We've not mentioned that gate, but it's certainly iconic, and also designed by architect Yao Zhuozhen, the man behind the three buildings. The Liberty Square Gate is in the style of a Beijing Palace memorial archway, as found in front of ancient imperial tombs. The blue and white coloring matches that of the memorial hall in the distance.
The main gate, the archway, used to be called the Gate of Integrity, and the name incorporated two characters of Chiang Kai-shek's courtesy name, but it was renamed Liberty Square Gate. Just one of the many controversies about the site's connection with the former ruler, who, just to remind people, yeah, he was a harsh dictator to many, but he has his supporters, seen as an anti-communist savior to others.
That's a good point. You mentioned controversy. The Performing Arts Center has done a really good job of staying out of all that controversy.
Yes, rather than preserving some fossilized vision of free China, of propaganda, it's evolved with the times.
So according to the abbreviation for the concert hall is NTCH, according to the NTCH's website information, it has passed through various stages in its evolution.
Yeah, they break it down to four. The major trends running through those phases are basically promoting local performers and art forms.
Yeah, and here's a great example of localization. So in 2007, a decision was made to overturn a major upcoming performance. Taipei had been set to get the Broadway musical The Lion King. Now, The Lion King, right? Everybody loves it. It's actually made more money worldwide than The Phantom of the Opera. It's a production that would, you know, guarantee fill the seats, but would be extremely expensive to bring in.
Right, and at about, what, 2,200 seats in the concert hall, 1,500 in the theater, these venues are not really big enough to get back your money on big, expensive foreign productions.
So the head of the National Performing Arts Center at that time thought, you know, instead of using all this money for The Lion King, maybe do some projects involving Taiwanese artists. And the budget was in part then used to establish the Taiwan International Festival of Arts, TIFA. It was launched in 2009 and, quote, created to showcase the latest developments in contemporary performing arts around the world, along with the best of Taiwanese artists and troupes.
Yes, that chairperson wanted a flagship production for the TIFA to highlight indigenous music. and the result was a musical called On the Road, which combined Taiwanese indigenous music with the Taiwan National Symphony Orchestra.
Which is a Western Symphony Orchestra and the NTCH's Orchestra in Residence.
Yes. The indigenous performers were from the Puyuma people, from one particular village, Nanwang, or Puyuma, in Taidong County.
The musical On the Road premiered in the National Concert Hall in February of 2010, and it's a simple story about the encounter of the NSO conductor with the Puyuma people. You know, I guess mixing real life and art, yeah?
Mm-hmm. And the production was a mix too, live performances and film clips featuring several indigenous villages.
Among the indigenous singers was award-winning singer Saming God and her sister, another singer called Jaja. So very much a family affair, a village affair, you could say.
A really good production and well received by audiences.
That was at the Taiwan International Festival of Arts, TIFA, one of the four big festivals. TIFA is held annually every spring. And since 2009, TIFA has hosted more than 200 programs, both local and international, and a million people at least have enjoyed performances from TIFA. It's become one of Asia's most iconic arts festivals.
The next annual festival is the NTCH Ideas. Since 2003, the Ideas Lab has mostly focused on exploratory art forms and social experiments. This is in early summer each year.
The third festival is the annual NTCH Summer Jazz, features both local and foreign jazz masters in its lineup. It's held every August.
Then there's the Art Quake in autumn. And it's, I'm looking at the website here. It's a dialogue between creative works and contemporary society. Okay. It's actually better than it sounds there. It's a recent example would be a Taiwanese folk songs given a modern rock twist. And some, you know, multicultural traditional musical instruments. Not bad.
And the performances there are also increasing ties to the general Asian region. The NTCH has moved beyond a simple binary of Western or Chinese traditions, and also, you know, tradition and modern. More interesting international music, and a lot of it is good Asian music from our neighbors nearby.
Yes, certainly. There's a lot to choose from. Just off the top of my head, I'm thinking of those Mongolian throat singers.
Yeah. Okay, and then another change in recent years has been a push to make the National Theater and Concert Hall places of inclusion. Inclusion, inclusiveness, including for people who might not be seen as traditional concert goers. We're talking about people with disabilities, including physical ones like being in a wheelchair or hearing problems, poor vision. The National Concert Hall is not just a leader in inclusiveness in Taiwan, but around the world. And some of the services they offer include audio descriptions, sign language interpretation services, and catering to audience members who might feel stressed. This one is interesting.
Stressed. Eric, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed by the modernity of this. I'm not sure old Chiang Kai-shek, the bronze statue seated up in the CKS Memorial Hall, would be too happy. He would be itching to get out of his seat, shake a fist, and start screaming.
Quite possibly. But if old Mr. Zhang would like to do that, he could attend one of the National Concert Hall's relaxed performances. So in a relaxed performance, you are absolutely okay to stand up and express yourself.
Yeah, relaxed performances. You'll need to explain that a little bit more.
Okay, so it's part of this inclusiveness program. A relaxed performance does not require normal concert etiquette.
Right. Usually you're expected to sit still and keep quiet until the end of the performance.
But let's say you have a kid who struggles with that, who gets excited by sound and movement, wants to shout. You know, kids like to jump up and dance, or maybe the kid wants to go to the bathroom. Under the usual circumstances of going to the theater, right, it's embarrassing for the parents. But at this relaxed performance, it's totally acceptable.
That's quite revolutionary. I mean, elite music venues like this are all about perfect sound quality, minimizing noise. Yeah, I mean, have you heard about the seats at the National Theatre and Concert Hall?
The seats? No, I missed that memo.
The seats are, well, apart from being comfortable and attractive, they're designed with acoustics in mind. There are rubber pads which reduce noise when audience members sit down or stand up. In addition, these seats have special sound-absorbing panels under the seats, which, when no one is sitting in them, they simulate a person. So the audience size, even the audience's clothing, that affects the reverberation time, the sound quality, the duration of the sound lingering in the space.
That is very impressive. Seats mimicking the sound absorption equivalent to that of an audience member. And the relaxed noise rules of these inclusive, relaxed performances are quite a break from the typical attention to sound in most theater performances.
Yes, but in a way, it's a bit like old-fashioned theater, you know, in front of a temple, such as puppet shows or Taiwanese opera, or even a traditional Chinese opera inside a building. Often it's with a somewhat inattentive audience, a baby crying, a couple of kids chatting, some old folks passing comments, you know, it's...
Yeah, exactly. A dog barking, just ambient sounds of life. And you live next to a temple, don't you?
Now and before, yes. And I've developed a musical theory that there are certain traditional Chinese instruments, distinctively loud, you know, crashing gongs and certain drums and wind instruments, which are distinctively purposely loud or high-pitched, have high-pitched sounds because they're played outside and they're competing to be heard above other sounds.
That is an interesting theory, and I think I'm with you on that. Okay, but back to this relaxed performance idea. The alternative to dealing with restless kids or kids that are too young to appreciate a performance is to take advantage of the National Concert Hall's childcare facilities.
Very nice. That's good. One of many services. The National Concert Hall has a series of logos, yellow and black logos, which they use to quickly show what services are available.
So there's naturally an icon of a wheelchair, you know, ramps, elevators, doors that automatically open, and a place in the theater hall for wheelchairs to park.
Fairly standard these days, though.
Yes, of course, but access is much more than just that. You know, it's about avoiding segregating people in a certain area. So there's lots of details like arranging for family to sit together, the person in a wheelchair sitting alongside family members, enjoying the concert together. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So this inclusiveness at the halls, it's not just about doing a one-off show, let's say for deaf people or for the blind, but it's helping them attend events on a regular basis by providing certain services.
Yeah, they have sign language interpretation for some performances. So you have an interpreter there doing sign language.
And there are screens with captioning.
That's useful for everyone. In fact, I wish they would do that more with English as well for in the West. You know, a lot of operas are in Italian, so you get Chinese subtitles. So the audience can actually follow and understand the story. And it's not just a bunch of...
And for Taiwanese performances, too. Yeah, Taiwanese as in Taiwanese language. Chinese character subtitles help there.
For the blind or sight impaired, there's also help provided. They can borrow a device and get commentary on what the actors on the stage are doing. So, you know, something like, John finishes drinking his bottle of whiskey and drunkenly walks to the front of the stage.
Funny, okay. They also have something called a touch tour, which is a pre-show tour. The aim is to give those suffering from sight problems some added context, some extra information about the performances and the theater space. So this can be taking people on the stage to give them a sense of the dimensions, or it could be handling some textiles, you know, costumes or other surfaces.
This is very unique. I haven't heard of this in anywhere else. Here's an example. The NTCH recently created models of its pipe organ for the visually impaired. So a model that they can handle. They made 3 models of the pipe organ at the National Concert Hall. Not the same size, of course, but, you know, to scale. Very accurate models. All the pipes and also a small keyboard that you can touch and get a sense of with your hands.
The actual pipe organ itself is quite a feature of the concert hall. It was the largest pipe organ in Asia at the time the National Concert Hall was opened in 1987.
Yes, but that honor now belongs to the National Arts Performing Center, more commonly called Weiwuing, in this city of mine, Kaohsiung.
Eric, you're always ready with an aside to take the subject to Kaohsiung, aren't you?
Definitely.
Okay.
So, like I said, the blind or vision impaired can handle the model organs on, I guess you would call it, a touch tour.
Touch tours were originally launched at the National Theatre in 2017 and then later for the concert hall.
And guide dogs are welcome, of course.
Eric, you want to take a companion animal?
Yeah, I want to take my emotional support kiwi bird. But in all seriousness, though, John, here's something useful for you. Brochures and material printed in a larger size. Easier to read for older people, you know, which makes up a bigger population of Taiwan these days.
Okay, Eric, I'm only 9 years older than you. It's not like I'm your dad or something, okay?
9 years.
Yes, lucky number.
Good.
Yeah, so we've been talking about inclusiveness in terms of making it easier for people to attend. But another big change has been in the kind of performances.
Yeah, so they're broadening the range, not classic Chinese, classic Western choices, but more local content, regional content.
Yeah, it's quite amazing how modern and forward-thinking the NTCH is. You would have thought it would be an old-fashioned legacy of the Cold War, but you know, doing research for these Formosa Files episodes, I'm surprised how much they're kept up with the times.
Another example of that openness and diversity is showcasing performances with themes related to the LGBTQIA community. For simplicity's sake, and not to offend anyone, we'll just call that the gay community. Taiwan is generally considered to have the most progressive gay rights in Asia. Same-sex marriage, legalized here in 2019. More than legalities, despite being a very conservative society, many people don't necessarily, you know, agree, but they're just sort of cool with it. They're not going to make a fuss about it. Taiwan Pride is the annual gay pride parade in Taiwan. It's huge, held on the last Saturday of October, the largest gay pride event in Asia. Started it in 2003. I remember, I was there. And the parade reflects Taiwan's openness.
Yes. A good example of the National Theatre being part of this is its drama production of a famous novel called Crystal Boys. The story takes place in Taipei in 1971 and follows a short period in the life of a young gay man called Ching, who's expelled from his school and is also kicked out of his family home by his father. Ching hangs around a park called New Park, where he meets the novel's other primary characters.
So the novel Crystal Boys was adapted into a stage play and produced by the National Theatre. It premiered during the 2014 Taiwan International Arts Festival, or TIFA.
The audience response was very positive, with performances selling out.
The demand would lead to the National Theatre and Concert Hall authorizing a reproduction and tour of the stage play in 2020. It was performed at all three venues of the National Performing Arts. So the Weiwuing Performance Arts Center in Kaohsiung, the National Taichung Theatre, and the National Theatre in Taipei.
Modern performances, also high tech. With these huge buildings, there's a lot of upkeep. You know, basic maintenance work is required. Eric, you want a job cleaning all those chandeliers?
Okay, you do the chandeliers. I'll clean the roofs.
No thanks. But cleaning them would be better than replacing them. All those yellow glazed roof tiles on both buildings, they add up to, wait a minute, 519,998.
Okay, let's just say about 520,000 pieces.
You made me lose count. I'll have to start over again. But yes, 500,000 tiles.
Yeah, a lot of tiles. And back in 07, the buildings turned 20 years old, right? It was decided to replace all of those tiles. Taiwan gets hit by earthquakes, typhoons, and then, you know, 20 years, general wear and tear.
So they replaced and enhanced them with the waterproofing measures. It took 21 months and cost a fortune.
Right, so many changes in a short time. They've also started doing more environmental stuff. So anyway, take a look at their website if you get a chance, and definitely if you're in Taipei, check out the buildings themselves. Thanks for listening to Formosa Files. We hope you enjoyed this look at the three interesting buildings of downtown Taipei. I'm Eric Michael Smith.
I'm John Ross. Bye.